A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
My mom was like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you have to pay her that money." And I said, "Is there any amount of money that you could think of, Mom, that wouldn't make you happy that she's out of our lives?" And she's like, "Absolutely not." And I was like, "There you go."
D-I-V-O-R-C-E-P-A-R-T-Y. Welcome to Divorce Party. I'm Monica Casey here with Tom Arnold. Our guest today is a writer and producer, and he's a dear old friend of mine. Please welcome to the show, Heath Corson.
Holy shit.
Hello, my friend.
We did it.
We did it. There's Mr. Tom Arnold.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Tom. How are you? Heath Corson.
Nice to see you, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Of course. This is the first time that we've seen each other for what? Like 15 years? Like years and years and years ago.
How does Heath hold up? How's he hold up after?
We were just saying, he looks exactly the same. And so Heath and I, quick backstory, we met in like level two groundlings right away, became instant friends. He has such a good, just dry, naughty sense of humor. And I feel like we probably did some sketches together, but yeah, I've always loved Heath. And Heath, I think, I don't remember, was it during our groundlings or right after that you had got, I feel like maybe you had just gotten divorced and it was such a-
I just did, yeah.
And it would seem so foreign to any of us because we were so young, and it never occurred to me to be human and go like, "How are you?" Was that hard? On me? You know, I think I was like 26 and just like me. You know, I never thought to ask, "How are you doing?"
Right. Well, it was because I was probably early 30s at the time. And yeah, it was such an odd thing to be going through and be with people out in Hollywood. I had just recently moved from Chicago, and to be out in Hollywood with people who are pushing and all about their careers and they're not super interested in what you're going through, especially in a comedy class. It's the last thing they want to ask is like, "What's your trauma?" You know?
Yeah. Wait, so were you guys like college sweethearts? Like, what was your situation?
Great question. We met after I graduated from college and I went to Chicago and I started interning at the Department of Cultural Affairs, where we were producing theatrical events for the city of Chicago. She had a job and I was an intern. And I was really devoted to making sure this was going to hire me. This place was going to hire me because it was a great job getting to work for the city of Chicago. I mean, you got so many days off. You got Pulaski Day as a paid holiday. Like, it was insane. It was great. So I was like, "I have got to get this job." So eventually I got her job and she got fired. And so as a consolation prize, I asked her out. But, you know, it started on a bad foot.
Yeah. Like a dream come true. What college did you go to?
I went to Northwestern University in Evanston.
I'm very familiar with that. People that can't get into Northwestern end up going to Iowa where I went. If you can't get in.
Nice. Nice.
A lot of people up there. Well, that's good. And then, so you guys started, she got fired from her job, which does happen in government. You know, they kind of move up. They go, okay, this guy's moving up. And then did you reach out to her after that and go, hey, sorry about what you're going through. Want to hook up?
Yeah, let's go out. And she was like, okay. And we were both very young. And I think it was one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, this person has such flaws and they're so gloriously broken. Like I'm in such a good space. I'll be able to fix her and make her better. Like, look at me. I'm such a good dude. I come from a great family. I had this great education. I've got this good job. Like, I can spread largesse. Like, I could be a good guy and I can help her. Yeah. So that's how we started. Who would have known it would have come to a horrible end?
How long did it last? And what do you think was your, you know, the reason it ended?
Well, we were together for about, I want to say like 8 years. We got married because it was one of those things where it was like, well, I guess this is the next step. We live together. We're not getting along. I guess we should get married. Like, I guess that's what we should do now. And literally, I remember in the back of my head, I thought, well, I could always get out of this if it doesn't work. And then later, I was like, that was probably a bad sign. I don't know if that was your guys' experience, but like in the back of my head, I really all like the pattern recognition was so loud that it was going, you know, this isn't working. You could feel this isn't working to this point. Now you're going to take a bigger step and you know for a fact it's not going to work. And I was like, yeah, but that's not a big deal, right? Like, that'll be okay.
All right. Well, you know, your ego. You're in there, you're a humanitarian. You're like, I'm going to rescue this person because I've had things so good in my life. I share that. I have compassion. And I'm going to rescue them. And things are not going well. And you think, well, that this is something. I thought, oh, marriage will make it. That's the thing. If we were married, then she'd feel secure. And then we'd have this thing. Did you have kids? Because that's what people usually do next. They're like, okay, everything's terrible.
We did not have kids.
It's because he went to Northwestern. He has that leg up of sports. I have a question for you guys as men. So you both have been in relationships where you knew it wasn't going well and you thought, okay, let's just get married. Do you think there was also a part of you, even though you're like, that when you ask someone to marry you, even though you're like not sure about it, that it, you think, well, it reinvigorates the relationship. Like they'll want to sleep with me more. Maybe that'll turn things around. That was there a little bit of that?
Yeah. I think it's like what Tom said, it's a brave new aspect of it. So I think it's sort of like we're starting from scratch. We're now entering a new phase and maybe that'll reinvigorate. Maybe that'll bring a new aspect to it. And now everyone's excited for you and they're happy for you. And this is going to be great.
Well, I was going to say, my experience is this, I'm faster, like really quick. Let's get married. Like really very insecure. Let's get married. And there were times before the wedding, as the wedding is approaching, invitations are out, I was like, oh boy, this is not, but people are coming. They're coming in town. We got this stuff. And if I'd had courage, and I think both of us would have went, okay, this is rushed. This isn't working. You're flailing. But yeah, there was definitely a couple marriages where I went, okay, this is it. And I knew she probably felt the same way, but you got the people coming.
The deposits are paid.
Right. There was an aspect of me that I think being so young, just going, well, this is as good as it possibly gets. Like everyone's in pain. Everyone has these arguments. Everyone isn't getting along. Like this is just what it is. This is, you know, adulting. This is an adult relationship. Everybody hates each other. Everybody has screaming fights. Like, that's just the way it is. And I really had no concept that it didn't have to be that way. And whether that was low self-esteem or whether that was not knowing any better or whatever it was, but it certainly wasn't my parents' marriage, which they were high school sweethearts and are still together and love each other dearly. And I knew it wasn't that. And there was a little bit of, well, I don't need that. I could be bigger than that, right? I can survive more. I can handle it. I'll be okay. Even if it's not perfect, I'll be all right. And I think that's where, I think that was a little bit of the hubris on my end.
And were her parents married? What was her background, her family situation coming into this deal?
She was very blue collar. She was estranged from her parents almost completely. She did not talk to her mother at all. Her dad drove a train, an L in Chicago. So she literally only saw him when he randomly would drive the L that she was on, and she would wave to him. The only person that she talked to was her older sister in the family, who I knew. And I was like, oh, she's lovely. The sister was great. And we totally got along. But I never really met her family except in passing. So she was completely estranged from them.
That's an opportunity for you. You go, I'll be the guy. I'll fill the gap. I'll be the dad, the mom.
I'll be your family.
Right.
But it is definitely a red flag that we know about sitting here. You know, if they don't have any friends or family, and you're like, oh, perfect, because then I don't have to compete with anybody. But it's really, it's not a good move. I can speak from my experience.
Did you ever have anybody say right before the wedding, like a family or a friend, be like, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, totally. And my siblings didn't get along with her. They hated her. She hated my family. She was like, oh, I won't go to Thanksgiving. Like, you could go by yourself, but I'm not going. And so it was a lot of like, I'm drawing a line and you have to decide. And it's horrible. It's when you're like 25, you're like, oh no, like, what am I supposed to do here? So there was a lot of like separate but equal. Like, I'm not telling you not to see them, but I'm not going to go when you see them. And again, at the time, I'm like, I guess this is just what people do. This must be how it works.
Yeah, that's not true. And you know what's great about family is, and they aren't perfect. Your family's not perfect. But if they're buy into what you're doing, if they're all in on the marriage, you know, they can be helpful to both people.
Right.
So you're not perfect. I'm not perfect. If our spouse or our mate can go and talk to our family and have them go, and give a sympathetic ear. You know, when it's crunch time, they got to pick a side. But I think it's a good for just to have a group of people that are rooting for you. They might be your friends or her friends. People that aren't, they're out. That's it.
Right, right.
But this family thing where she would go with your family, you know, is bad for you. That means...
Yes.
Because we've all faked shit with people's family. Like, I still do that with my exes. I invited her mom in here for Christmas with me and the kids and try to be very nice. But there are some people, it's a red flag, I can tell you from what's going on now. There's something missing. And you can't possibly give that thing and still have yourself, your dignity, your soul. And it sounds like you figured that out.
Well, late. I mean, that's the relationship I'm in now, right? What we found is with my wife now, who is Italian and I'm Jewish, and we found that it's pretty much the exact same thing. Like, it's all about family. It's all about food. It's all about celebration. I'm from a very large family. So is she. So we both know what those stressors are. We both know that, like you say, you put it on for somebody's family because they're important to them, and you make sure that everybody's happy. And, you know, there's sacrifices you make, and they do the same for you. And that's, now I've realized, a good relationship where there's give and take. And it's not I'm keeping score. It's just, no, of course I do this for you, because you wouldn't even think twice about doing it for me. And that's the relationship that I have now, which is spectacular. And I wish I would have known back then.
Yeah, but
well, you may not have been able to appreciate it. You had to learn from the other one.
Right.
And how long have you two been together now? I feel like over 15.
We've been together for 13 years and married for over 10 now. So.
Wow.
Okay. And what does your wife do?
You know, when I met her, she was working at the Department of Cultural Affairs, and then she wasn't anymore because I took her job.
No, your new wife.
Oh, my new wife. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I took her job too.
That's how I do it, Tom. That's how I do it. I get in. No, my wife is a writer like myself. So she has written for television. She has written for magazines. She's been a journalist. So we speak pretty much the same language, and it's fantastic. The only thing that would be incredibly stressful is if the entire union went on strike. Oh, wait. So that was tough. But other than that, it's great because we both understand each other and totally speak the same language.
And you give each other space. You say, this is what your space, you know, you find. So I'm going by Jimmy Carter. He was married to his wife for 97 years or something. And he said, one, pick the right woman, which is something I haven't done. But two, you get mutual interests and then separate interests. And I think as a writer, she's a writer, so she knows, oh, this is how, when it's go time for him or go time for me, we need that, you know. And we also need the house to be like, there has to be some not great vibes, but there can't be negative, you know. There's got to be a lot of respect for each other, and issues that do come up, you know, there are times when you just can't bring those up when you're a writer. You got to stay in the groove there.
Do you have separate offices within the house, or do you sometimes like to go out and write somewhere else? How do the two of you work it out?
It's a great question. Up until COVID, we both had the same office. We were both in this room. Once COVID hit, I was in a writer's room. So her desk is right there. So she couldn't be looking this way and I was looking this way. So we moved her to the spare bedroom, and her office is over there. So we had to be on opposite sides of the house now.
Okay.
Yeah. But you're right. And I both of you understand, like, you have people in your family who don't really understand that when you're in a script and you're reading something or you're learning lines or something, they come in and you look like you're not doing anything. They go, oh, you're not working. Do you want to come for lunch or you want to have a drink? And you're like, no, this is me working. This is what it looks like when I'm working. So there is a difference. Like you said, Dom, it's a lot to have someone who understands, even when you're just staring at the window going, I don't know what they say next, that she goes, oh, he's working right now.
Well, you have to have, because you're both writers, and it's this way for writers, comedians, whatever, you have to have some respect for their talent. Because if you're in a relationship speak for the comedy world. If someone's like, I want to do comedy, oh, great, do that. And then you watch them, you're like, oh, I'll never get an erection again. You have to have some respect. They don't have to be, but you have to be in the area where you each respect what your talent is, what you do. Because if there's a huge drop off, you just can't work your way out of that.
That's right. Do you bounce stuff off of a partner? Typically, do either of you, like when you're working on material or working on stuff, will you bounce stuff off a partner?
My first wife is Roseanne. That's how we got to know each other. I started writing stuff for her, and we were comedians together. I was very young; I was 23, and bouncing it off. And she and I tell people this: well, men, we know we're good looking, but if you tell us we're funny, then you got us forever. And so I have such respect for her, what she did, her writing, her stand up, and she, it appeared that she also had that for me. I know she did, because she did would use my material that I wrote for on TV or Johnny Carson or in the Roseanne show. That's, you know, that's ultimate respect when they're like, their shit is on the line and they're gonna go, he's the guy right here. I
gotta
care about him. And that's a great feeling. But others had no,
like, if they're not in the business, maybe harder.
Yeah.
You know, when I was younger, I was with someone who was significantly more successful than me. And that was a really hard mental thing for me, because I was so insecure, because I felt so less than. So it was a little intimidating and too hard for me to, you know, run. It was funny. He would ask me to run lines with him for his show and I would do it. And it was like fun and no problem, but like, it was harder for me to ask for help, even though you're like, wow, you have this great resource, someone who's working all the time. And I also felt like when I was younger, he didn't respect me or didn't sort of value my talent until I did a few things on my own. And then he saw what I brought to the table, or finally something shifted. And he was like, oh, she knows what she's doing and she's talented. I don't know when that happened. Then right. It got easier and I felt that level of respect and that shift change. But what's interesting is my friend Bob and I, we always say to people, you know, don't put yourself on, don't use your spouse as a reader.
Yeah.
It's hard. It can just be a weird, hard thing. So, but I feel
like I have to say, I don't know that I agree with that. I actually, we have or the relationship I'm in right now, we have a really good ability to look at each other's stuff and say, I really like this. I think this could get massaged, or like, here's a pitch. Do you like yes. this? Do you not like this? Like, throw it away. And there's no ego in it. I just want her stuff to be as good as it can be. And I wouldn't dream sending something out if she didn't read it and say like, or say like, am I crazy? Does this work? Or is it? And she'll go like, no, that's not it. And I'll be like, all right, you're right. Okay, cool.
I think that also comes with when you reach a point with a partner where all of the representatives are you're comfortable enough to have that level of honesty.
Right.
And so definitely as I've gotten older and, you know, I can, similar to you, it's more well received and I can handle someone being honest with me, or I feel safe enough to be honest with someone else going, maybe try it this way, or
right.
I don't believe you, do it again, you know?
Right. Right. The stakes don't feel so make it or break it.
Yes, yeah. Like I'm going to hurt their feelings. Because also, as we're all artists, so we're all, whether or not we think we have an ego, we do, or we're just, it's our art. We're sensitive about it.
I do know the feeling. And it was, I can remember this from the first time. Well, I got it from when my grandma, when I was into community players, I was a little kid. And my grandma was goddess of the Ottumwa, Iowa Community Theater. I was being one of the kids of the king and she came over and told me how good I was. And I remember a tingle in my spine and the same feeling the first time I wrote a script for Roseanne. I sat to sit there sort of breathless, waiting and while she did it and she gave me positive response. And I thought, that's that feeling. I like that situation. Now, if you're with someone, and, you know, Roseanne, she's very much more successful. It was very cool. I loved it. And then at a certain point, I remember the first time I hosted Saturday Night Live by myself. And that was difficult for her. And when I did True Lies, I could feel a thing. And we could have worked through that because, you know, it's a change. You're like this, oh, he's doing stuff on his own or whatever. And healthy couples will work through that.
Right.
You know, my thinking was, oh, yeah, she always told people I was great. Now I get to do some good stuff that, you know, but the dynamic of the relationship changes a little bit. And I remember it being a little uncomfortable. I just kept saying, you know, I need to be aware of how she's going to feel about this or that. And, you know.
Well, it is hard to the dynamic of the person who is already more successful than you. And then when you start to get your own, from therapy or lots of conversations with, you know, my ex, it was that fear of this person's not going to need me anymore. If their success continues going up, what are they going to need me for? And I feel like after doing a lot of therapy, to me, that's a insecurity that like they're not thinking they're not good enough, that you could both be successful and still want to be with that person.
Right. I will say that is one of the great things about the current relationship that I'm in is that, look, nobody stays on top forever. It all ebbs and flows right now. We all know that. So like you might have a job and you need all the focus and you need to be, and she'll make sure like, great, I'm going to protect that. And then when it's in the reverse or she's got a lot to do, I'm like, no problem. I step up and I'm going to protect that. And like, there is an ebb and flow to it constantly. And her success doesn't, I don't need to feel small to make someone else feel big, right? Like we don't need to do that. So you asked what my ex had done and she
for
had
you.
Worked, yeah, she had worked at a recording studio in Chicago for years and years and years and was eventually sort of the manager, ran that studio and then went from there to becoming a voiceover agent. And so she was my voiceover agent for a while. And I remember at one point there was some big cartoon or something that I got submitted for out of Chicago. And I was really excited. And like, I think I progressed pretty far in it. And I was just like, I got to get this. I really want this. And 3 days went by, and I didn't ask about it because I was like, I'm not going to ask. I don't want to. And we're at home. And finally, I was like, hey, whatever happened with that thing? And she was eating and she looks up and she goes, oh, yeah, you got it. We just forgot to call you. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Thank you. Didn't make me feel great, but you know.
My God. So what do you, I mean, was it like, what kind of led to, you know, who did somebody finally, did you both tap out at the same time? Did one of you have to be the bad guy? How does it kind of?
Sure. So we were really not getting along when we got married. As soon as we got married, I think I was at it in 1997. I came and slept on some buddies' couches out in California. And I was like, I think we should make a shot. Like, let's try it. Why not? Let's come out here and see what we can do. And she was like, absolutely not. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess we won't do that. And so then after we got married, she was finally like, okay, you know what? Maybe we should try. And that was 2003. So that was like 6 years later. And so I moved out here. This is actually a great story. I moved out here. She was living, we had a condo in Lincoln Square in Chicago. And so I moved out, I rented a place and I was like, I want somewhere that feels like Chicago, that feels like you could walk around and feels like just really cool. So I found a place in Studio City because I convinced myself like that's the cool area of town. It was not the cool area of town. I got something right on Ventura and it was ridiculous. So we, and Laurel Canyon, it was right by that post office over there, which I found out later is where all these porn stars live. Because they all needed to be close to Van Nuys.
Back in the day, that's where all the porn was done.
Yeah. That's right. So I would see this one guy who would like leave with this cool leather vest on and nothing else and get on this like Triumph motorcycle and drive off. And in the morning, I'd go out and get my coffee and he'd be coming back and he'd be all oiled up. And I was like, I wonder what this guy was doing all night. And I was like, no idea. So not oil either, apparently. I didn't know. And so the movers stole all our stuff. And she was still in Chicago. And we paid for all the movers to put everything. This was 2003. So the movers put everything in the truck. They say, okay, well, we'll deliver it to LA in like 6 weeks. I rented a place. I had a bed. And that was it. And my laptop computer. And the movers called and they were like, oh, it's not going to be another $1,000. It's going to be another $4,000. And I was like, I don't have $4,000. And they're like, well, we have your stuff. So now she's still in Chicago because we were going to sell that condo. And she's living with a friend in Chicago, with a girlfriend. And I'm living out here in LA trying to make a life. And it was insane. So I actually found out where the public storage was that the movers had put my stuff. And in the dead of night, me and a friend, we took the license plate off of her car and we had to break into that facility and put another lock on and then leave. And then I called another moving company and I said, okay, here's the lock, clear out that unit and bring me all that stuff. So I had to steal back all my stuff. And after that, finally, it was like months after like 4 months, she said, okay, I'm going to come out and join you in LA. At that moment, I got a job back in Chicago for 6 months. So she moved to LA. I moved to Chicago. And then that happened, I think, once more. So in the first 18 months of our marriage, we were living together for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then once we hit those 3 months, we were like, oh, this really isn't good. This isn't working. And I think by then we both were exhausted and we had moved out to Glendale. And then we're in this place in Glendale together on top of each other. And we were like, neither of us were happy. She didn't want to go out and like meet people, which I was like, I kind of have to do that in order to like just be in the industry and just talk to people and connect. And she was like, no, I don't want to do that. I talk to people all day. She was an agent here in LA at that time for a small company. And so we were just really growing apart. We had different friends and we both came to each other and was like, I don't think this is working. And she's like, yeah, I don't think this is working either. Now that's the good aspect of it. Later, I sort of found out that like she started to have a crush on another guy. And I don't know if anything ever happened, but like I found some weird Facebook messages at the time that like sort of made me uncomfortable. And I was like, this is weird. So we really sort of split. And at the time we were like, we're going to be the couple that can still be friends. So we were sharing a dog. I was like, I'm going to be a good dude. I mean, to the point where we went to a mediator. I paid a mediator. The mediator gave us one draft and we had some changes, but I was like, I'm a writer. I'll just change this in the doc. And the guy was like,
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
You shouldn't do that. And I was like, dude, I can't pay you another $750 to like change four lines. So we agreed on everything. Everything seemed very amicable. We went to City Hall and literally together and we're like, we want to get divorced. And they were like, well, you have to sue him. And she was like, okay, I sue you. And I was like, great. We sued each other. And they delivered me the papers there. I countersued and they delivered her the papers there. Like, we were like, we've done it. We've done everything. The separation.
Five through divorce.
We're like, we're killing it. We're killing divorce. And then about 6 months went by. And then I was like, we could be a good guy. I could be a good dude. And we were sharing a dog. And so she would say, hey, I want to see the dog. And I was like, okay, come over and see the dog. And I'd give her the dog and she'd walk the dog and like bring him back. And then a little bit of time went by and I started dating. And that's when it started to get really uncomfortable. Like it was sort of like, no, I don't want you, but I don't want that attention to not be with anyone else. Cause you are still my family, in quotes, right? Like, I still want you emotionally to be there for me. And then when I started dating my current wife, that's when the fit hit the shan in a big fucking way. So that's when it started to be, yeah, Tom.
How did your current wife, was she aware that you're sharing a dog with somebody and doing all this, whatever, buddy? And I'm suspect when people say, I'm friends with my ex, because I've had a lot of guys go, I'm best friends with my ex. They're already remarried somebody. I go, there's some bullshit going on there. You know,
that's right.
If people ask me are you and Roseanne friends? I go, if we could be friends, we'd be married. Are you kidding me?
That's right. That's right.
But your wife now, you got this thing. Was she able to talk to you about how that made her feel? Or was she just super chill about?
No, she was a little suspect of it because one of the first things we did to prove that everything was okay was my ex was graduating from graduate school and invited us to her graduation party. And I said, we should go. It'll be fine. And my current wife was like, tell me again why you're going to go. And being funny, I was like, well, because with my alimony, I paid for her graduate school. I kind of feel like I should go. Thinking, oh, look how charming I am. I could prove that everything's fine. So we go, we meet up with some old friends who we went with, which was like, you're going to be with this couple that we know. Everything will be okay. We drink, we get a little buzz on. And at one point, the ex sort of buttonholes my current wife and is like, His family's the worst. Oh. It's a fucking train wreck. Stay away from his fucking sister. His family's awful. Like, they're going to hate you. I'm just trying to protect you, sister. Like, pours venom into her ear to the point where she's like, what's going on with your family? How come I haven't met them? What's wrong? And that's when I called my sister and I was like, you need to have dinner with my girlfriend and me right now to show like we're okay. And we do. And everything was great. And she was like, that's so weird because she seemed to really want to help me out. And I was like, I called her and I was like, hey, that's not cool. Right. We're friends. Like, you know, she's like, I'm just trying to fucking warn them about your piece of shit family on it. And I was like, uh-oh, hold on. And so then she was like, well, you guys are, I lived on the east side. My wife-to-be lived on the west side. She lived in Venice. So like, in order to see each other, we would have to pack up the dogs and like go to each other's houses for the weekend. And she's like, the ex was like, oh, I don't like you taking the dog all the way to Venice every weekend. Like, and I was like, listen, you don't get a vote. No. So she calls one weekend and says, I want to hike the dog. I haven't seen the dog in a week. I want to hike the dog. And I was like, I felt bad. I'm a good guy. Me and my wife, me and the girlfriend, we'll drive the dog over. We'll give it to Griffith Park. We'll let you hike the dog. And then we'll take the dog home. And she goes, don't bring her. And I said, well, you don't get to ask for a favor and then control how I'm going to do the favor. So I'm going to bring her. We'll go to breakfast and then we'll come back and we'll grab the dog. So we go with the dog. I know the girl she's meeting on the hike. The girl that she's meeting is there. She's 45 minutes late, right? Just as a fuck you. So we're standing around. She sees my girlfriend and comes screaming at her, starts just screaming, looks like fists up, about to attack her. Like, I told you not to bring her, and da-da-da. And my girlfriend at the time, who was not about to take this shit, Italian, hot-blooded Italian, was like, look, bitch, I've never mentioned you in my entire life, but that stops now, because I'm gonna tell everybody this story. And this is where we fucked up. The ex takes the dog, and goes up on the hike. And we're shaking, we're angry, we're so mad. And then we look at each other and we go, we gotta come back and get the dog. Why did we let her take him? We should have just gotten in the car and fucking drove off. What are we doing? We're so stupid. So then we go, we have coffee. 45 minutes later, we come back. I'm across the street.
Two things. Your wife now is a fucking saint. And you
She's a saint.
She went, that's such bullshit what you put her through. I'm going to tell you, don't ever do that again. Number two, you're so lucky you didn't have a kid with that crazy bitch.
Yes.
A person that'll do that with a dog, I speak from experience. Very similar stories except with kids. You certainly, I hope, you're a nice guy, but God damn it. Don't do that again.
No, you know what, Tom? That was it. That was the point where I went, I don't need to be a nice guy in this situation. Mm-hmm. This could be in a situation where someone can go, oh, that asshole I used to be married to. And I went, you know what? That's not going to diminish me at all. That's okay. And that was a huge turning point.
Good, good.
I thought you were going to say that you came back and she was gone and had stolen the dog. So, oh, but either way, it was all terrible.
No, I talked to her and I was like, that's it. I'm done. And she's like, no, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. I went, no, I'm done. Because I talked to my current wife and she was like, I can't be in a relationship like that. That's too crazy. If this person's in your life, that's dangerous for me. And I went, no, it's done. That was it. I don't have to be the good guy. You're more important to me than anything. I'm finished with that. And I really was.
And that is being a good guy, standing up for what you have and the person there that actually cares about you. And standing up for yourself. And I'd be like, if she took the dog, I'll get a new dog. Fuck it.
I did like that dog. I did love that dog, Tom.
Yeah. She wants a dog once in a while. But yeah, I mean, that's a crazy story. Monica?
Are you ready for the coda? Are you ready for the coda? That was 13, no, more. That was probably 15 years ago. And the only other time I'd ever heard from her was when that dog passed. And I got a text that was like, because I never said anything. And she heard from a mutual friend that the dog had passed. And she's like, you didn't even fucking tell me the dog died. And I was like, delete, done. Okay.
I love it.
Cut to my 50th birthday party in Santa Barbara wine country. We had bought a house up in one of these little towns. Me and my best friend are loading up 10 bags of ice. And across the street, I see this couple. Somebody goes, Heath Corson? And this couple that I used to know that I lost in the divorce, right? We all had lost people in a divorce. And I was like, hey, I know that couple. And I look over, and sure enough, they were coming out of a restaurant in that little town that they were there for the weekend with my ex. And she comes over and she's all smiles and she's like, oh my God, I'm doing great. I'm really centered. I'm really happy. I teach yoga to like underprivileged children. And she's a social worker and like, I'm great. And I looked at her and I was just like, are you happy? And she said, yes, I'm happy. And she said, are you? And I said, I am very happy. And I said, well, it's really nice seeing you. And that was it. And that was the coda of, and my friend's like, I kind of thought you were going to invite her. And I was like, are you a fucking idiot? What's the matter with you?
Your history, I can see your friend.
Right.
You get shaky. You're like, oh, this is a happy ending. Let's make it super happy.
Let's make it super happy. You know that family she hated that are all there at your house? Let's bring her over. I was like, yeah. Are you a fucking idiot?
As long as it's, because, you know, you got to be, when you're in situations like that, you got to be a dick. You got to go, that's it. Cut off.
That's it.
It's that. Not that this lingering thing and this fantasy that, well, it's going to work. Yeah, we're going to
Oh, we'll have coffee. No, I have no interest in that. There's nothing I need.
That's a namaste right
Well,
there.
Is that both of you guys? Do you have that too? Are you like clean break? I mean, you both have kids, so
we
there's.
We have kids with our, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an additional complication.
There was at least my second wife, I always thought, because she had been unfaithful. And I found out about it after we broke up because I was saying to my trainer who trained everybody, this woman, I'm thinking about calling up so-and-so again and seeing if we could. And she just started weeping, my trainer, like weeping. She goes, what's wrong? She goes, I never wanted to tell you, but she was at a person I worked for me. They were hooking up. I go, whoa, you do, right? I go, who else do? She goes, everybody. I go, you don't mean everybody on my TV show. She goes, yeah, everybody do. And I was like, and I was hurt, but then this is how twisted I was. I was like, okay, she's going to have to cheat with me on that guy. That's all that. She called me, and she was crying because the trainer called her. She was so sorry. And then at the end, I go, well, here's what we need to do. You need to come over and then we'll cheat on that guy and then that will satisfy me, which is crazy. But there's no reason to be. And by the way, she's doing so well. She was too young for me. She's out there, she's got a family and I talked to her fairly recently and she's a really good person with a family and not with that guy, not with the houseboy, but a family and I'm very happy for her and she's a solid person. So, you know.
Wow. But yeah, no, you're right. It's one of those things where you go, yeah, it's okay for that to be done. There's nothing more I'm going to get having that person in my life. And I'm happy with that decision.
But you see that behavior after you've had this sort of novice, this, oh, we're doing the divorce. Oh, hey, you file against me. And you're like, okay. But then when you see that behavior about the way she treated your current wife or, you know, using the dog, you got to go. You know, and when people say, later I found out my wife cheated on me, I go, that's good. Good news. That way you don't go back. Because you will. I will. I'm a guy that would go back. My first marriage, my wife cheated on me with a bodyguard I'd hired. And a great big dude. And I'd sent him to Mossad bodyguard school. And so when the National Guard said, you know, she's in Europe with a Ben, who became her next husband. I was like, and they're holding hands or whatever. I was like, I got to see that because that will confirm. Then I won't go back. Like, you know, fly over to Sardinia where they we were supposed was that I was supposed to be for the summer. She's met with this guy, and I get a bodyguard, a off-duty rogue cop, you know, guy with a gun, because Sardinia is crazy. So we land in Sardinia. My brother's there with me, and we think we'll take our time. We'll go to our hotel and relax, and then at the right time, we'll drive up on that cliff where she is, and I'll see what I got to see, you know. And our car got surrounded by the three cars, guys with Uzis, and they're like, she wants to see you now. Like, she knew I was.
The godmother.
So we went out. I say to her, are you sleeping with Ben? I didn't say it like that. And she looked down and said, no, I knew they were. And I swear to God, I was so relieved because she had somebody. And I still had to make a move on that guy. And then I'll tell you this, I've said this before. So at my bodyguard, after we got out of there, he's like, you know, in our culture, women don't treat men like that. I go, hey, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. He goes, my brother's like, what? What do you mean? He goes, we could do something. I go, my brother's like, what do you mean? Well, for $50,000, when the landed Rome to come back to America, we will plant drugs on him, and he'll be in prison for the rest of his life. And I go, oh, no, because then I know I'll go back with her. And my brother's like, what will we do for $10,000? So when they landed in Rome to come back to America, because they filmed it for me, eight cops just tackle him. They, you know, they do the full body cavity. So they do all that. So they didn't touch her. That was the deal. They missed their flight. And I thought, you know, that's probably illegal what I did, but that was satisfying. That's
totally worth it.
That's pretty good. Did she ever know that you did that?
Well, the National Choir guy who called me originally was also flew over on the plane behind my brother and I, and had people with telephoto lenses. So it was, you know, and I've talked about it a lot. Like, I don't care if she knows or he knows. Fuck him. Because the bottom line, he was fucking my old lady. And on a job I'd given him. He worked at a donut shop when he met me. But they ended up getting married, have a baby. They, you know, all good news.
I thought you were going to say that guy then went to her and was like, here's what we could do for 15. Go back at you. That's a night. That's not a bad job if you can work it out.
I would have been able to go all in.
Yeah. But the time in between from the divorce to when I met my current wife, it is. And Monica and I had talked briefly about this when we were texting about the idea of this show. There is that just sense of failure. Even when you don't want to be in it anymore, you're just like, I wasn't good enough to keep this thing that was clearly broken together. And that was a big thing for me. That was really hard. And you realize later, like, oh, when do I mention my divorce when I start dating people? Like, when I feel like I'm carrying all this baggage. And then you realize nobody else gives a shit. This is you. Nobody cares. And that was a big paradigm shift for me. You know, when you start dating and you mention it and you're like, oh, they're going to look at me weird. They go, this guy, there's something wrong with him clearly because he's been with this person and couldn't keep it together. And then you realize, oh no, that's not true. That's you've created that in your head and nobody else cares. Was that something that you guys went through as well?
Oh, for sure. I mean, especially as a woman, I felt like tainted goods.
Right.
Oh yeah. Tom, do you have to hop off to do your.
I think I do, but.
I do that and I'll wrap up with Heath.
Please do. Heath, you're the best. You're happy now for you and your wife. And it's good to be happy. It's good to be happy.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Thanks, Tom. Nice to meet you. That was really nice.
Oh my gosh, Heath. Okay. Yeah. So back to the first date I did go on, the guy already knew because a friend like set us up. So it was, you know, so I didn't have to do it. But then whoever after that, he was a little bit younger. I felt a little insecure. And I was like, oh my God, I'm already older. Now I have to say I'm divorced and that I'm divorced with a kid. Like it was
right.
I was sweating. I thought for sure, like the movie that was playing in my head was that he would go, well, it was really nice to meet you. Bye. That's totally what I, and then of course I did it. I like verbal diarrhea'd it in like my best Cliff's Notes version. And then he was like, oh my God. Wow. That's so interesting. I'm going to go to the restroom. I'll be right back. And like, this is not weird at all. Like, I'm so glad you told me. Like, he couldn't have been cooler about it. And like, as the restroom, I was just like, What? That was, oh, that's, it's okay. Like, it was just, yeah, shocking.
Right? Isn't that shot? And it had to be so much different to be doing that with a kid as well. Like, that's a really, yeah. So it must have
Yeah.
been so nice to be able to have somebody just be like, no, I see you. That's fine. That doesn't make you anything.
Totally. Yeah. I think all guys care about is like, they just want to get laid. You know, I'm just like, well, I'm still gonna hook up with you. It's fine.
Right, sure. They're like, is the kid home right now?
Right.
Like,
Are they there
where's the
now? Like,
kid? Are they there now? Yeah.
what's the, yeah, exactly. I'm sure that's all they really care about. So
Right.
funny. Well, another thing I wanted to know too was, and during that time, had you met a kind of good group of guy friends in LA that so you didn't feel so kind of alone or like, because I know for a lot of men, that starting over period is extremely lonely if you don't have like a regular job where you're working or, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I totally did. I was very lucky that like some of my oldest friends that I knew from like theater camp and then went to college with were all out here as well. And like
Awesome.
my ex didn't like them very much, so I didn't get to see them all that often. And then like getting to reconnect with them was like fantastic. And now they're my best friends in the world and probably some of my oldest friends.
Yeah.
So it's great.
And how did your family, were they so relieved
They were
slash
so relieved. They were
awe?
incredibly relieved. My mom got very offended that there was going to be some money that I had to pay her for alimony. And plus, it was really financially hard because the money I was making in Chicago doing whatever jobs I was doing at the time, temping or some full-time jobs and then some acting jobs, I was doing pretty well. But then when you move to LA, the amount of money I was making was like almost nothing. So I was paying her on the old amount on the alimony. And so it was a struggle. So my mom was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you have to pay her that money. And I said, is there any amount of money that you could think of, mom, that wouldn't make you happy that that she's out of our lives? And she's like, absolutely not. And I was like, there you go. What are you upset about?
Totally. I mean, and it's so crazy because we talk about this sometimes on the pod too. Like, you know, when the average divorce cost in California alone, at least today, is like $17,500. And that's getting off cheap for a lot of people.
17 or
Seventeen,
70?
17
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
no.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of other people, I mean, my share alone was closer to 70.
Right.
Yeah, it's a
Yeah,
lot.
it's a
So
lot.
crazy. Yeah.
Insane.
I also love that you used a mediator because I don't think I started hearing that term go around until, you know, like well after you had gone through your divorce.
I remember I was lucky that we didn't have anything. Like we had just moved, like the
Yeah.
mover stole my stuff. Like I had nothing. I was like, I have 35 boxes of comic books. Do you want any of those? And she was like,
Yeah.
fuck no. Like, so I didn't really have much. So it was okay. Like there was, you could have this car and I'll keep this car. Like it was pretty
Yeah.
minimal. But even then, the amount of money was like, it was
Oh.
shocking to me because now I've got to cover that nut and be in LA and cover my own nut. And so that
Oh.
was rough. That was a rough, you know, whatever it was. Like, I think it was something like over 24 months that I had to pay. So it was
Oh my
crazy.
God. Well, thank
Yeah.
God it wasn't forever.
I know,
It's
right?
so cool. Ooh. I mean,
What
but
is
yeah.
that, 10 years? Like, if you hit 10 years, I think you have to
Well,
pay.
that used to be the norm, but
Okay.
actually, even in California, most courts are not honoring that anymore. They take into consideration like your age and all of that. Or
Okay.
if you filed right at the 10-year mark, they're like, come on, you know.
Right,
So
right,
they're making it not as easy, but
right.
it's crazy. I've been reading a lot of articles lately about women financially, even though a lot of people love to shout like, oh, they're such gold diggers or they're taking all this money. Actually, divorce usually works out not well for women in the long run, and women don't
Sure.
usually end up making
Sure.
as much money anymore. So it's kind of a interesting topic, but yeah, I mean, I love that you I never knew that you had that crazy situation go down at the end, but that you learned from it and that ultimately you decided to choose the healthier, not the drama, and you chose a great partner who embodied so much of the shadow of your relationship.
Yeah. That was a lot of soul searching. You know, you do that after something traumatic like that. You're like, well, what, how did I contribute to this? What was I putting up with? What am I no longer going to allow myself to do moving forward? And so that was a really healthy sense of being able to look within and come out the other side. And that was good. That was one positive that came out of it.
I love it. Do you have any advice or thoughts on marriage for people who are going through it? I mean, obviously you were open enough to do it again.
Yeah. I didn't think I would do. I think like walking out of it, I was like, oh no, I'm not going to get married again, until I met my wife who I'm currently with, where I was like, I can't imagine not being with her forever. I can't imagine not being together. I think always you want someone, whoever it is, that you guys are better together than you are apart, that you are bigger than the sum of your parts, right? You're larger than the sum of your parts. So it's a friend of mine and I would always say, you want someone who one plus one equals three, that the two of you together make more than you would separate. And that's truly how I feel in the relationship that I'm currently in, is that we are better as a unit together than we would be separate.
Yeah. And I love your work dynamic too, where it's like, if she's busy, you're the one who's like, okay, I'm picking up the slack, I'm getting the groceries, I'm doing the things.
Totally.
Good back and forth teamwork.
Yeah. Yeah. And we try to do that in everything. And listen, it doesn't always work. And sometimes you have to say something, but we're open enough in our communication that I feel like, oh, this is good. We also met each other when we were older. And so we had learned these lessons, and we had all both carried our scars of our previous relationships. And we knew, like, this is who I am, and this is who you are, and this is how we'll be together. And it'll work if we do these things. And I think that you can't overlook that. You know, there is something to, like you did, going into something when you're young and not knowing better, not knowing the rules, not knowing what's good and healthy and what's not for you.
Yeah.
Because people can do anything as long as they both agree to it. As long as it's working for both of them, like, hey, do whatever you need to. But it's only when it stops working for one that you have to go, oh, this is, I need something else.
Mm-hmm. For sure. One foot out.
Don't stop running, Monica.
No. I mean, look, as much as I wanted what I wanted, I mean, there definitely, I always felt like it was not a solid foundation, you know? So yeah, it just definitely keeps you on your toes. And
yeah, I think I share that with you, that the fact that you sort of go, this, I can get out of this right off the bat is a big red flag.
I used to see, like, I'd be driving around LA and I'd see a for rent sign and go, oh fuck, when's that going to be me looking for an apartment again? Any minute, I'm just, I don't know.
I could keep driving.
Yeah. Is this a literal sign?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I know. It's rough out there, but I'm so happy that you are happy. Yes. Genuinely. And I love seeing when things work out for my friends in LA. And you're still here.
We're still here. Still here.
It's amazing.
Battered and bruised, but not down.
That's right.
Not down, but not out.
You know, I feel like it just makes you more interesting.
That's right.
That's right. We got to experience some life. Otherwise, what are we? Just sheltered.
And I will say, this is the first time that I've thought about it and talked about it for a really long time. Like, it's not something that I feel like is at the surface, or like even is something that I clock or I feel those twangs anymore. Like, no, it's just something that had happened.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I'm so glad that you were open to share. Any last thoughts about divorce or marriage or advice to your younger self?
Oh my gosh. I mean, geez, I don't even know, and I don't know how you feel about this. Like, would you trade in the experience if you could save yourself from it? Or, yeah, I don't know that I would either, because I think part of it made me who I am, for better or for worse. So I wish there would be some moment where you would be like, run, don't do it. But I don't know. I think it was so, it was such a cornerstone into who I am. And I think it made me a better partner now. And yes. I think that that's good. And so I wouldn't, even though it was painful and it was hard, I don't think I would trade it in.
Yay.
Yay.
Thanks, Heath. You're the best.
You're the best. This is great. Thank you for thinking of me.
Thanks, Heath.
And tell Tom, thank you. That was so lovely to meet him.
I will. Thanks, Heath.
All right, my friend.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.